You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to a new week of the Locked On Pacers podcast. The All-Star stuff is going on, and we have a really cool guest here to talk about the team as the All-Star break is here. Jeremiah Johnson from Fox Sports Indiana and the Pacers. How are you doing, man?
Good, Tony. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm kind of excited for a week of not watching basketball after this morass of watching a game every day for the last forever, it seems like.
You know, I guess I would agree that I'm ready for a little bit of a break, but I think by next Monday or Tuesday, I'll probably be itching a little bit to get back to doing the job because, as many of you know, this is not really a job. It's fun, and I think after a couple nights where you don't have a game or an ability to update the standings and check and see what teams have done in the playoff picture, you miss it a little bit. So it'll be a good break. I think everyone on the broadcast crew and also, more importantly, I think inside the Pacers locker room, they were ready for a break. And it comes at a pretty good time for this team. And I think once everyone returns from the break, they should be in a really good spot.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And that kind of bleeds into what I wanted to ask you first as a guy who travels with the team. You know, do you enjoy all the traveling and are you excited for the time off from not being at home so much, or are you looking forward to being back at it?
Oh, you know, I definitely enjoyed the travel, but also appreciate the time at home. It's one of those things where in my former jobs working in local news, I was not gone as much, but I was gone more, if that makes any sense. You know, I was working a lot of weekends and nights and always on call for if there was a report for Peyton Manning having neck issues or a trade or something would happen. You always had to kind of be ready. And the good news about this job is that when the schedule comes out in the second week of April, I can pretty much, you know, put it all in my calendar. And usually about a month after that, the team will issue their travel itinerary. And I pretty much know where I'm going to be when. And it's a little bit easier to kind of plan your schedule and your life now because there are 41 road games. There's a lot more time on the road, but I call it good travel. It's, you know, they do the best they can to kind of make it comforting for the players. And because we are on the same planes and stay in the same hotels as the players, it's also comforting for the broadcasters. So it's good travel, and March is going to be one of those months where we will be away from home quite a bit, already having, you know, still having one West Coast road trip and also a long four-game road trip to start the month. So it'll be a challenging month of March, but I always say when you get to March, it's really a fun time of the year because the playoffs are so close and you're really, you know, every game's important and you have a lot to talk about. At times in January, if you're traveling, you know, that can be that rough patch for a lot of teams. And I think the Pacers have survived January. They thrived in January and they played pretty well into February. So even though they'll be on the road a little bit in March, I think it won't bother them maybe as much as some other months.
Yeah, I agree with all that. It'll be fun to see how the playoffs shake out. And Zach Lowe wrote about how many teams might be tanking this year too. So there's going to be some impact literally of every game the Pacers play the rest of the year. But I want to talk a little more about your job and all the fun things you get to do. And I really wanted to know if there's something you found out about a player that didn't really get reported that surprised you that you're able to share, if that's possible.
You know, I was thinking back to some stories and just experiences. And in addition to, you know, specific stories about players, it's interesting to think back to the end of last season when the Pacers picked up Lance Stephenson and kind of, you know, the excitement that the fan base had, but the uneasiness maybe that the locker room had. And that was one of those things where we were in Cleveland when that announcement, or actually when he was able to join the team for the first time. And I believe we might have even been in Toronto when the news became official that he would sign a contract for the remainder of the season. And it was crazy of how excited everyone was to have Lance back, even though we hadn't really done much on the court in those two seasons. But the guys inside the locker room, not many of them knew Lance. And there was a lot of talk about Paul George and Lance being buddies. And, you know, they are friends, but he was one of the only people in that locker room that knew what it was like to play with Lance Stephenson. And so that day was surreal for me. I can remember being inside the Caps practice court, and they were going to have just a light shoot around just to kind of get Lance to know the plays. And his flight was delayed, and guys were just waiting around. And it was after practice, and basically everyone's kind of sitting around, and it was not a good point in the season for the Pacers. They've been struggling, and they really needed to go on a long successful run the last 2 weeks of the season to even make the playoffs. But Lance walked in, and it was like, welcome home, Lance, from all the media and the training staff and some of the support staff, because everyone that knew Lance was happy to have him back. But the players kind of walked by and were like, hey, what's up, you know, and they didn't really know him. And it was one of those situations that I wish I almost had video of, because you thought he'd kind of bring this lift, and then everyone kind of like, who's this guy with six games ago? How's he going to really help us? But then that first game in Cleveland, it was amazing how much he did help the team. So that was just kind of a little story, not just about a player, but how also Lance has grown this year. He's fit right in for guys that did not know him. It's amazing how one of those games last season was against Toronto, when, you know, everyone saw the skirmish between the Pacers and Raptors, and Corey Joseph was on the other side of it. And then Corey, when he first signs with the Pacers, a lot of questions were, oh, how are you going to get along with Lance? And he totally dodged all of those questions. Even one time I asked him what he remembered about that game, and he said, I don't even remember the game. And then he actually referenced the playoff series the year before, which had nothing to do with the question that I was asking. So early in the season, I was real worried how, you know, Corey and Lance would get along. And now, at this point, they look like they're long-lost best friends, and their chemistry on the court is such that Nate McMillan is hesitant to even separate them. So that's just a little bit of story just about Lance. I figured I could think back to some stories and some situations in the past, but people probably want to know a little bit more about this year's team.
That's a good one. And it was interesting, because in the playoffs too, Lance and like Kevin Serafin and LaVoy Allen had pretty good chemistry, and they'd never played together before. So that's funny to hear.
Serafin, that's another story. You know, as you have a discussion like this, different things can come to mind, but Serafin and Lance in the locker room after the Pacers played Philadelphia, it was really interesting because they were watching, I think, the Heat and Cavs maybe play, and were trying to hope that maybe the Heat would lose so the Pacers could move up or even clinch a playoff spot. And Serafin and Lance are sitting there having this conversation like they, you know, are cousins that have known each other for 20 years. And they're just like joking around. And Lance was talking about how when he came to town, he didn't have any clothes. So basically his entire wardrobe was something he went and bought at the gift shop a couple of days before that. And, you know, there were stories of him every day going in the gift shop, buying a new pair of Pacers sweatpants or a sweatshirt.
That's the best Lance story ever.
Yeah,
that's awesome. I didn't know that. But yeah, I love how he's fitting in, and he's so exciting. So every story about him puts a smile on my personal face. Another basketball question for you, but not about the Pacers. I remember you covering those 2010 and 2011 Butler magical runs to the finals game, and I imagine that those had to be just an absolute blast to cover and be a part of. Am I correct in my imagination?
Yeah, you're not imagining. It was awesome, and it was probably one of the things, you know, I always wanted to, once I got into the business, my goal was to try to be a sports director, or at least, you know, a sports anchor in Indianapolis. And one of the things that as I was working in Hazard, Kentucky, and then in Terre Haute, is I wanted to get to Indianapolis, not just to cover the Colts and the Pacers more, but I wanted to be able to go on the road and cover a team in the NCAA tournament, because that to me just seemed like the ultimate, you know, great assignment, because not only are you there, you know, covering one team, but you're able to be kind of immersed in the tournament atmosphere, and you can maybe watch some of the other games when you're not working. And it's just a great atmosphere. And so the first time I ever got to do that, I was, believe Butler in Buffalo, and it was the AJ Graves era, and they were able to win a couple games in Buffalo and advance to the Sweet 16. And from that point on, I was just Selection Sunday was kind of the one day, almost like now, where I look forward to the schedule release day. Then I looked forward to Selection Sunday because I kind of had an idea of a team or two I might be covering. And there were 8 different locations, and you pretty much, you know, your next week or two is determined by the draw. And so, you know, covering teams in general in the NCAA tournament was kind of the thing I enjoyed most. And then that team in that era of Butler basketball is the group that I probably was as close to as any, and tried to go to cover a lot of games at Hinkle Fieldhouse. But over those 2 years, I was probably one of the few people, maybe myself and David Woods, because they had different media, different times. And I was, you know, we were one of the few that covered every game in both of those tournament runs. And so, you know, starting with San Jose, going to Salt Lake City, and then, of course, Indianapolis the first year, and then the second year going from New Orleans was the Sweet 16. First round was in, need to so memorable. I was having trouble remembering. Oh, Washington, D.C. Yeah, the Verizon Center, and then going to New Orleans for the Sweet 16, and then Houston for the Final Four. I mean, those runs were awesome. Those players were cool. I enjoyed, you know, the late Andrew Smith, talking with him so many times about things. Matt Howard, I don't know if there's a cooler athlete to be able to cover than Matt Howard because of kind of the way he does things, and maybe not normal in the way he carries himself, but I also enjoyed the interactions with how those guys would interact with some of the national media. And it was every time they had a media availability, they just, you could tell someone was talking to them and they just, you know, had a new like favorite player that they were talking to. Ron Norred just became a star in those seasons because of, you know, the interviews that he gave and also the way that he played. So those runs were awesome. And when they, you know, when the final game ended in the loss to UConn, you can't root, but I mean, you're so close to them. You obviously were wanting them to win that game. And it was just a little bit of a, you know, a pit in the stomach. Just one of those, like, the story could have been just this magical ending, and it ended the way it did. And I forget, Brad Stevens in the locker room after the game was asked by a reporter if there's anything he wishes he could have done differently. And in that game, they shot 19% from the field. And without even flinching, he said, yeah, probably shot 30%. We shoot 30%. We're the national champions right now. And it's just like, oh, man, you know, how did that happen? But it was such a cool thing to be a part of. And, you know, once I finished that, I kind of was like, you know, I don't know if I'll do anything cooler. It was the Super Bowl was kind of the first pinch me moment that I had when the Colts beat the Bears. But after that, it was, you know, all right, even if I get out of this business, I'll have done, you know, one of the coolest things ever. And I'm not sure anyone will experience what they did, especially out of, you know, the Horizon League.
Yeah, it was so magical for me as I was pretty young for those two. It was so exciting to watch those teams just progress through that. Like at school the next day, I just remember we didn't do anything. We just talked about Butler. So I can't imagine, you know, literally being surrounded by the team every day as they progress through those tournaments.
No, the crazy thing is too, that was just when Twitter was starting, and we were really, you know, encouraged at Fox 59 to get into Twitter, and I'm still into it probably even more than, I mean, I'm surprised I am the way I am, but you know, you can go back and download or request your old tweets. And I did that, but I haven't gone back to read them. I did it a couple years ago and I haven't gone back, but I do think that's a nice little diary moment because of all the things I was tweeting and coming up with at the time and while watching Butler games and kind of covering and, you know, getting to know that team. So it is a good thing that I'll probably look back on at some point and be able to share and read.
There are a lot of sporting events I wish Twitter was around for.
Number one. There are times I wish it was not around. But
I agree. I totally agree. I think the Pacers Pistons brawl Twitter would have been unbelievably funny.
Oh yeah, you know, story about that to show how far we've come. That was in November of 2004, and not to talk much about this because you said the word I did, and I'm not really gonna get to call it that. But I was at Channel 2 in Terre Haute. And it was my last Friday night covering high school football, and just got off the set on our Friday night show. And our station in Farmersburg did not have cable. Like, we just basically had the antenna and, like, some NBC feeds. And we also, I think there was only one computer even at the station that had Internet Explorer. The rest, we had wire service. And so we got off the set, and it was like high-fiving each other. We had a good show, and I kind of was like a little sad that it was my last show there, but because I'd already agreed to come to work in Indianapolis. And someone in the newsroom just said, "Hey, guys, I think there was some kind of fight or something at the Pacer game tonight." And I just remembered, oh, okay, you know, no big deal. You know, just got in the car and listened to the radio and hardly maybe heard a little bit about it on the radio. I don't even remember what I listened to that night. And then I got home, and it was just all you could see. But, yeah, it – you'd find out about it much quicker, and you'd find out everything about it in this day and age.
Yeah, it was something else. I can't imagine how that would have been. So that's a cool transition, though, that you came to Indy that night. That's kind of funny.
Well, it was basically, you know, I think I maybe had a couple more weekdays to work, and then I had a week off before I was going to get started. But Chris Denary had just been named sports director at the time at Fox 59, and he had been on the job for a month or two, and then he was immersed in having to cover that. And I remember, you know, I was not officially starting, so I was just watching all of it, but I didn't really start covering the Indianapolis sports landscape until the last week in November, the first 1st of December. So it was covering, you know, I covered that last time the Pacers had played on Christmas was against the Pistons.
Yep.
And I covered that game and then pretty much, you know, was part of those storylines and the end of the Reggie era, being able to see that and both the good and the bad. You know, it was sad the way that, you know, Reggie's time had to kind of come to an end, even though he performed so well as he was going out.
Yeah, that had to be tough, and it stinks that that's their last Christmas game. I think they could be on the docket for one next year, but I want to talk more about this year's team now. You know, you do those sideline reports in between quarters at the end of games, all that. Do you have a favorite player on the team to interview after games?
Well, I would say until this year, and it probably should not be a big surprise because I've talked a lot about him. You know, CJ Miles was probably the best person, not just in practice, but also after games. You kind of always secretly pulled for him to have a good first half, so maybe he'd be the halftime walk-off, or if he'd have a good game. But it was always great, and I, you know, miss having him around, but I was glad to be able to interview him over the years. And on this team, I would say that the closest person to CJ is probably Thaddeus Young, and I just think about those guys that I appreciate is that they accepted that part of the job and have never once flinched or been negative about it, and that's so rare because you know, these guys, you ask a lot of them in terms of they basically have to be available after every practice and after every game and even potentially sometimes before games in the open media time. And you think about football, the star players talk, there's one time a week that they talk, and then after the game they are, you know, supposed to talk, and sometimes they can slip out of there before they even do that. And so, you know, NBA players, that's 16 weeks and then 16 games. So that's, you know, at most 32 times, you know, outside of training camp that you, you know, would have to hear from a player. Well, a star NBA player has to pretty much, if he's playing in the game, that's 82 games. And think about how many practices are between the games. So I would think it has to get a little bit monotonous from them. And it's probably a challenge for us as reporters and media members to come up with some good material that's not as generic. But at the same time, when I've got a pregame show to prepare for, we kind of have to get in one of those generic questions about the opponent with at least somebody. And so, you know, sometimes you're playing a team for the fourth time and you've already asked about, you know, a certain player every time, and you got to bounce around a little bit. And so it does help to have guys like CJ and Thaddeus Young to be able to ask those questions. So, you know, on this team right now, I love talking to Thaddeus, but I also appreciate that Big Al's had a little bit of a resurgence because he is – awesome to talk to. And just to share a story about Al, I was talking with Rick Bunnell from Charlotte Hornets, who covered him for the Carolina, I think, Observer. And he was sharing a story about Al, and he said that when he was with the Hornets, he was obviously one of the star players. And there, he would go up to Rick before he left the locker room in case he had not gotten an interview yet and say, "Are you good? Do you need anything else?" Instead of, you know, you have to be available, but you don't have to go up to the media to say, "Would you like to talk to me?" But he also understood, you know, his role on that team. He was one of the stars. And so the media members, you know, probably talked to him a lot and probably had a good reason to. He would go up to the guys before leaving in case he hadn't gotten an interview and just say, "Hey, are you good?" Not that he wanted to necessarily be interviewed, but he wanted to make sure that he didn't leave any of them hanging. And so that's a great story about Al. And I think it's been awesome to have him with the Pacers the last couple of seasons.
And if only every player was like that.
I know, but I would say, and I mean, you have a good perspective on this. I think with this team, not everyone is the best soundbite, but I don't think there are as many guys who don't enjoy or would actually, you know, offer a smirk or a negative reaction if you asked to talk to them. I mean, you're going to have a lot of those guys. And I would say on each team, you probably have an average of 3 or 4 guys that'll, half the time you ask to talk to them, they'll maybe try to blow you off or just not be interested and maybe give a negative response. And that there's nothing more of a turnoff to me before I have to interview someone that if they roll their eyes or they act like they don't want to do it. And it's like, I don't even want to bother with the interview at that point, even though there are times you have to. And I don't think with this team, I don't know that there are any guys that are negative. Now, not every guy is the best soundbite, as I said, but at least they're going to be, you know, positive and accept the responsibility. And I think credit for that goes to also David Benner and Chrissy Myers and the PR staff, because they do a good job of making those guys do that part of the job and get in, get out, and get on your way.
Yeah, they're really great. And I think that that's a good segue into another question. I'm going to jump on our little sheet here. But do you have any good hot mic stories from interviews or not so many?
You know, I learned early on. It was one of the first things I learned as an intern, that you see a mic, the mic could be on. So you got to be careful of what you do or you say. And I guess the closest thing to that is hot mic is something making air would probably be the Scott Pollard story. And I love Scott still. And, you know, many people know the story, but it was my very first, you know, game on the pregame show to start the season when he compared his excitement to the upcoming season to excitement abounds, especially in my pants. And, you know, that wasn't really a great way for me to have my first segment on Pacers Live. And Scott went on to apologize later. But I remember thinking at the time, like, am I going to have to apologize right now? Are we going to go off the air? And it was not a swear word or anything, but it was certainly something I wasn't prepared for. And I think he was trying to just make a joke and have fun and show some personality. But no one said anything. The craziest thing about that whole show was nobody said anything in my ear at the time. And, you know, the show ended and the stage manager and a couple of the people that were around were like, oh, great show, you know. And I just, like, was it? And then I picked up some of the blogs the next day, and then it turned into kind of a bigger deal. But that's, you know, you prove anything you say can maybe come back to haunt you. And the other maybe story that I'll share is that when you're walking around, like, you always need a few minutes to kind of get your composure before you talk into a microphone. And so I even catch myself now, we're going to halftime and I'm going from the court to interview someone and trying to hustle as fast as I can to get to the Fox Loft to do a halftime segment. And if I'm walking up the stairs or, you know, my heart's beating, it's hard to talk sometimes. And luckily, I haven't had any issues with it here. But the worst situation, I had it happen twice at local sportscasts, where in Terre Haute, we used to have to edit our tapes. And then we had to take them to a tape person who would play them out in the order that you had them in your show. And I was literally sprinting during the weather to get the 6 tapes to the tape guy and then to sprint out to the set to get the microphone on. And I literally sat down about 5 seconds before the light came on after the commercial to do the segment. And my heart was beating so fast that when your heart's beating really fast, you actually can't talk. It's hard. And you almost have to, like, stop and breathe for a couple minutes or a couple seconds at least. And I literally couldn't talk. And I was waiting for the first highlight to start. And I just, I've never felt so helpless, because in my mind, I'm like, everyone's going to see this and be talking about this. And I couldn't talk. And so as soon as the highlight started, I just said, bear with me for a second. I had about 20 seconds of just dead air where I tried to breathe and get through it. And then I was to the point where I felt like, you know, I was calm enough that I could actually continue, because it was a helpless feeling that I couldn't do anything about. And the mic was hot. Nothing bad got on air, but it was certainly not good.
It's kind of the opposite of a hot mic, right? Nothing happened at all.
I wish. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man, that's funny. I'd be so nervous, too. I don't know how you guys do it.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really you don't think about it. It's weird how I'll get nervous at times speaking in front of a group of people, you know, maybe 20 or 30 people at times, and not really nervous, but I'll get more thinking about that instead of the light going on the camera and there's, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 people at any point, you know, watching. But
man,
you just get used to it.
I'm sure. But I kind of stage fright talking to people at work. I can't imagine getting in front of a camera knowing how many people are watching. That's something else. I think we'll close with two things. I actually want to throw this one in for Adam. It's a little sidebar. Do you and Grady have a rivalry now that he's out of here?
No, I mean, we're technically, we're both still covering the Pacers.
Yeah, that's true.
10 hours a week. And I think he tweets more about the Pacers than he does the Nets. So, we had him on Pacers Live pregame twice. See, I've had him on my show more than he's had me on his show. And he has a lot more time to fill. So, you know, maybe if he wants to invite me a few more times, we could do that. But no rivalry. And actually, helped me out a little bit, too. I had to fill in for him a little bit during the Fever season a couple of years ago, while he was not able to, with all of his jobs, he wasn't able to do all the Fever games. And so I was the PA person at the field house. And that was actually probably one of the hardest jobs that I've had, because you have to be really loud and energetic. And also, I wasn't trying to, in that fill-in role, create my own shtick. So I was basically just trying to not upset everyone who loves Grady. And so I hope he didn't care, but I did borrow some of his lines because I wanted people to feel like that it was, you know, close to what they expect and like from a game. So tried to fit in the traveling in Indiana. So I hoped he wasn't upset about that. I never really got his take on it. No rivalry, but good to see him being able to do what he loves. And I heard he's going to get to do some Yankees as well. So he's a star, and he's in a big market, and he's enjoying life, I think.
Well, if you include Gritty, I officially like one thing about the Yankees now.
Yeah.
That's funny. Did you get to say Tua when you were doing that?
I don't remember whether I said Tua or – I think I did say Tua, but that one's hard because you always have someone to kind of remind you, but in the course of the game, you don't think – like, that's an NBA and a WNBA rule about you have to say that there's 2 minutes.
Yeah.
If you miss it, you miss it, you know. So I would average about 3 out of every 4 quarters in that WNBA game that I would actually get it out in time. But I don't remember exactly because, you hate to steal all of everyone's things, but then Tua is kind of what they expect, right?
It is. I didn't know that was a rule. I thought that was just a fun thing.
No, yeah, and you do hear it in other arenas as well, and I think it's a reminder to the coaching staffs as well because of the whole fouls in the last 2 minutes and maybe even with the officiating. So that is something that you're supposed to say as a PA person. And at times it can be odd because if someone's, like, going up for a layup or getting ready to shoot a jump shot, I'm not sure the protocol of 2 minutes, you know, and you could distract the other player from missing a shot.
Oh, man. I never would have thought of that being a thing. Let's close out with the classic Pacers question at the All-Star break. Are they better than you expected, or did you think they'd be as good as they've been?
I mean, I actually asked Grady this in Brooklyn, and I guess I did remember that I asked him it in the first time in December, and he said he wasn't surprised, and I'm not sure that anyone couldn't be just a little bit surprised at the record because – who surpasses a season win total projection before the All-Star break? I mean, that almost never happens. And, you know, I'm not surprised that they're contending for a playoff spot because I kind of thought I saw no reason why they couldn't be one of these kind of top eight teams. And so if you say that and they're sixth, you could say, well, it's kind of right where you had them. But I think the rest of the East is so much better. And maybe the record, I think it has to be 8 games over .500 is – for me, even the most optimistic of people, I think maybe about 4 games above maybe where you thought they could be in a ideal world. So they're in a great spot. They also do have that tough stretch of schedule towards the end of the season. So I think that they're aware that it's going to get tougher. They're going to be on the road, and they need to take advantage of all the opportunities. But it's been amazing with this team. You know, people will talk about the Dallas loss and you know, maybe those games after Christmas, but games that Victor Oladipo has played and they've faced teams in kind of the bottom, you know, 10 or 12 in the NBA. I don't know that any team, you know, outside of maybe like the Warriors and the Rockets has a better record against those teams. They just haven't had the stub your toe kind of games. Now they've had portions of those games where they've fallen behind, but for the most part, they've come back and they've won. And that was the one thing I did think about this team going into this season is that I thought there would be some games that they did not have enough talent to compete, but I didn't think that they would mail it in. And I didn't think that they would have, you know, games where after the game, Nate McMillan was lamenting the lack of energy and effort. And, you know, there's been points and starts where you could say they didn't have the full energy and effort, but you compare what this team does in terms of just bringing it on an average every night, and you compare maybe to any other team in the NBA, and I'm not sure anybody has as good a percentage to quantify that, and we see the Pacers more than we see the other teams. And I do think most teams play very hard. I think that's a little bit of a misnomer around the NBA that the teams, you know, don't try. I mean, teams try really hard, and with social media that we talked about earlier, if you're not trying, you're going to get exposed and made fun of. So, but sometimes it's the difference between 95% and 100% can be the difference between, you know, staying close with a team and, you know, the other team going on a 12 or 15-0 run. So I'm pleasantly surprised, but once you saw them do it for about a month or so, I was not a member of the camp that, oh, they'll regress, you know, this isn't them, you know, they'll have to fall back to earth. I mean, this is who this team is. And as long as Victor's healthy and they don't have any other significant injuries, there's no reason to think they won't win, you know, three out of every five games moving forward. And if you win three out of five, you're going to win a playoff series. And then, you know, you're, you know, four out of seven, obviously, is what it is in the playoffs. But it's just going to be fun to follow this point forward. And I love the attitude and the intensity. And it's been a joy to watch.
Yeah, I'm not going to say the P word until it's official, but I think that that is a good mantra to have going into that that part of the season if it does happen. And I must admit that I was on the opposite camp as you. When they played the Magic and the Magic were like 8-5 or something, Nate Duncan called it the regression bowl, and I agreed 100%. But I'm glad they've been able to stay the course and be awesome. And it's really surprised me and, you know, made me think about how I myself analyze teams. It's been really fascinating. And I really think, you know, these next three games, twice against Atlanta, once against Dallas, if they can find a way to beat them, they can be 36-25 rolling into their tough stretch. I like where they're at.
Yeah, and that's always tough to project. We'll do that on pregame as well. We'll look at a week ahead and you say, oh, well, they can win these games, you know. In reality of those three games, you might stub your toe in one of them. But, you know, you win two out of three, you're not going to be in awful shape. And, you know, for the most part, I think it's been good, though. This team hasn't fallen into that trap of looking at games as a group. They've just taken the next one, and you hate to hear a coach or a player say one at a time, but it's the approach they really need to have. And so, you know, as well as anyone too, you can't really ask Nate about a stretch of games because he's only going to tell you about the next one. So it's fun for us to look ahead, but to project those next three, and if you can get three, and if you at least get two, and you also see a team like Detroit where, you know, maybe they're not quite as good as they showed in the four or five games after Blake Griffin. You know, that's the team I'm kind of watching where you want that ninth place team to kind of keep losing so there's more separation to really lock in a playoff spot. But I'm okay with if the season ended the way it is right now. I think I'd be cool with a five seed in a matchup in against the Wizards in the first round.
That'd be very fun to watch. You got anything you want to promote or talk about before we get out of here?
No, just appreciate all the fans. Ratings are up significantly on Pacers. Not just the games, but the pregames and the postgame show ratings. I know it's tough for fans to, you know, consume three plus hours of coverage, but we really do appreciate those that make the extra effort to come in, you know, 30 minutes early and try to make it worth your while. And, you know, as well, the Sideline Guys podcast, second year, I've been doing that with Pat. And that's one of those things that we just kind of decided 2 years ago. No one really told us to do it. And to be honest, no one really in the building comments that much on it. So when we hear fans say they appreciate it, it does make us feel good because, you know, it's just another outlet for Pat and I to kind of share some stories and some insight that's outside of the confines of a heavily produced pregame or game broadcast. And so we've been trying to do those about once a week, and appreciate fans downloading and listening to that, and look forward to interacting on Twitter, or even I think I'm scheduled to do an Ask Me Anything on Reddit next week. So Ooh. Maybe keep an eye on that as well.
That'll be fun. Yeah, I do love the sideline reports. You and Pat do a great job. I got to shout out Pat again for what he did during that Pelicans game. I don't know how he pulled it off.
Talking with Mark and Eddie.
For an hour and 15 minutes about not basketball. That had to be crazy hard.
Yeah, I would agree. And we had our own difficulties. And it would have been fun, I think, to be able to do what they did. But on TV, it was such a – it was almost like a breaking news situation to where – you know, some of the news coverage that I've had over the years kind of helped a little bit, but it's also a delicate balance because nobody there was really wanting to talk about it. But yet we had to stay on the air, and we probably would have enjoyed talking big picture about the team or about some other things a little bit more. But we honestly thought every time we went to commercial break that we were going to be getting an update and a ruling, and it just kept dragging on and on and on. And it would have been fun to even join in some random conversations, but I think sometimes that plays a little better for radio than TV.
Yeah, it worked out great. It was a great broadcast. Thanks for doing this, man. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Enjoy your coverage on 8.9 seconds, and appreciate your help also with Lance Stevens' statistics earlier this season.
My only TV gig. My mom was so happy about that. So
even though I botched it.
No one cares. It's okay.
I'll work on that. I'll try to do better the next time.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Take care.